This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, we're going to be talking about contaminated imported foods from China and other food safety issues. My guests are Tony Corbo. He's the legislative representative for the nonprofit organization Food and Water Watch, which we'll talk about, let you know what it is. He's, pardon me, responsible for food-related legislative and regulatory issues that come before Congress. My other guest is Gene Halloran, Director of Food Policy Initiatives for the nonprofit organization Consumers Union, publisher of Consumer Reports. And Gene is currently responsible for developing policy and staff initiatives on strengthening FDA and USDA roles in food safety, biotechnology, mad cow disease prevention of prevention of seafood safety, bacteria in meat and poultry and produce. And please excuse me, for some reason I seem to have a frog in my throat, and I don't know why. But I want to thank both of you for joining us on Thanksgiving Eve, and you're both on the East Coast, so it's a little bit late for you. I hope you haven't had too much to drink at this point. Oh, gosh, are they still there? Wait a minute, are they still there? Before we go any further, let me just mention this. Your Legal Rights is funded by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And Tony and Gene, lovely to have you on the program. Tony, because I don't think, frankly, because it only came to your organization, Food and Water Watch, only came to my attention very, very recently. I think if you would take a minute or so and give us a thumbnail sketch of what Food and Water Watch is.
Well, thank you, first of all, for having us on this evening. Yeah, Food and Water Watch was formed in November of 2005, so we're celebrating our seventh anniversary. We're a spinoff organization of Public Citizen, Ralph Nader's consumer advocacy group. And we actually, you know, got fairly large for the office space there at Public Citizen. So we spun off and formed Food and Water Watch. We primarily work on food policy issues, sustainable agriculture, food safety issues. And then the water part of our program deals with water quality issues, improving the safety of water. And we also fight against attempts to privatize public water systems. And we're trying to get Congress and state governments to invest in refurbishing the decrepit infrastructure around the country because they're in dire need of repair. So that's pretty much what the types of work that we do.
I want to mention something because I think it's very important, and this was brought to my attention by a very good friend of mine, a teacher in Hawaii. And she wanted me to take a look at this, and I felt it was very important for all of you who listen to this program, whether it's live in the Bay Area or live on the Internet at www.kalw.org, or if you listen to the program delayed throughout the state of California. But in your website, Tony, one of the comments that you made, or at least someone in Food and Water Watch made, was, quote, "China should not be allowed to export any food for humans or pets to the United States until it gets its Food Safety Act together," end quotes. I wonder if both of you would talk about this, please.
Sure. I can start this off. China is exporting more food products to the United States, and yet its food safety system has all sorts of problems, from the fact that they cannot enforce food safety standards there. In some cases, the regulatory officials are corrupt, and so what's happened with a couple of prominent cases in recent years. The melamine incident that happened in 2007, first in pet food and then in human food,
Melamine is a plastic. Is that right?
It's a plastic. It's an industrial product. And what happened in 2007 was that the Chinese were adding melamine to wheat flour that was used to manufacture pet food here in the United States. And the reason they were adding melamine to it, it was to adulterate it so that it appeared to have more protein in it. And maybe Gene, maybe you can explain how that happened.
Had a different color or what?
Yeah, well, it was because there's nitrogen in the molecular composition of melamine, and the tests that they use for protein just measure nitrogen content. So they could add this plastic, and the food product would appear on the testing that they were using, or that their business partners were using, to have more protein, and therefore they could get more money for it.
I see.
So what happened in 2007? There were over 17,000 complaints were registered with the Food and Drug Administration that is responsible for regulating the safety of pet food, of pet owners reporting illnesses among their pets, primarily dogs and cats, and then there were actually upwards of 4,000 reported deaths here in the United States, and they eventually traced it back.
Of pets, Tony? Of pets?
Pets.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they eventually traced it back to this wheat flour that was being spiked with melamine.
Yeah, one of the ways that this came out was one cat food manufacturer was testing a new formula and feeding it to different cats to see if they would like this new flavored version he was trying, and the cats all died.
Oh, my God. This was being tested in the United States?
I actually believe that manufacturer was in Canada.
Canada. And we're going to talk about Canada in a little bit. Is there still a problem with pet food coming into this country from China?
Yeah, there is. And the most recent situation involves chicken jerky treats that apparently are manufactured in China and exported to the United States. And pet owners started to report as early as, again, 2007, that their pets were getting sick from consuming these chicken jerky treats from China. And it wasn't until this past year that at the behest of Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio and Congressman Dennis Kucinich, also of Ohio, that FDA actually went to these pet food manufacturers in China to actually conduct an inspection of the facilities. Now, unfortunately, China did not allow FDA to complete its inspection of those facilities. The FDA inspectors attempted to collect samples of the pet food products in those facilities, and the Chinese refused to turn over the samples. Essentially, the Chinese said, we'll take the samples, we'll do our own testing, and we'll give you the results. As far as I'm concerned, that was cause enough to just stop any imports from China. But the FDA has decided not to pursue that. But anyway, so in September of this year, FDA finally released some statistics that 360 dogs and one cat have died from eating these pet treats imported from China. And another 2,200 cases of illnesses have been reported to the FDA.
Let me ask you this. apparently, some major corporations, major box retailers are selling these foods still that are coming in from China. What would you suggest that consumers who have pets should be doing in terms of making sure that they are getting food that is safe for their pet?
Well, for one thing, they should avoid feeding their pets these chicken jerky treats if they're coming in from China. Apparently, first, FDA does have a concern about these chicken jerky treats from a nutrition standpoint, because they think that they believe that they contribute to pet obesity. So they have a concern from a nutrition standpoint to begin with feeding pets these treats. But there have been a number of actions brought by consumers. There have been petitions that have been filed with FDA. For example, at the end of August, I hand delivered nearly 20,000 names of consumers urging the FDA to halt the import of these chicken jerky treats. There are several other petitions going on right now. Excuse me, targeting Walmart, Walgreens, Target, some of these retailers who are carrying these products, urging them to recall the products or to stop selling them.
Are these products that are in these retailers' stores, are they showing where they're coming from? Are they showing that they are made in China or not?
Yes, they are. And again, there's some U.S. manufacturers who've essentially outsourced the production of these of the pet food.
So the food is made in China and then comes back into this country, but under our laws, can we rely on it that the products will show where they were made?
Well, for the most part, yes. But again, if you have if the food is processed or it contains ingredients, they don't have to label that, and that's the other problem. That you have some ingredients that are manufactured in China or other parts of the world, where that does not have to be included on the label.
There are a couple of things I want to do.
One of the interesting things about our law, I mean, we do have this country requirement for country of origin labeling that a couple of years ago was expanded beyond just processed food to include fruits and vegetables and meats and poultry, but there is a very significant problem, which is that if they import the raw ingredients and then process the product further, so if you take your, say, ingredients for pizza and make a processed pizza product here, then no longer do they have to say that that it's imported.
Wow, that's a problem. Let me interrupt you for just a minute. I want to let the listeners know that I have, over the last, I would say, at least 2 weeks in preparation for this program, and I'm not trying to hammer the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, but I did make a telephone invitation to one of the doctors connected with FDA. I got no response. Tony Corbo then gave me a reference to someone else who's very involved with the FDA. I sent an email a few days ago inviting him to join us on this program, received nothing. So please understand that it was my desire to have someone from the FDA join us on the program. In addition, because there is so much that I would hope that you would like to learn about this issue of contaminated food, whether it's China, and we're going to talk very briefly about Canada also, contaminated beef. I want to give you some websites so that you have this and you can do some research on your own. For Food and Water Watch, it's www.foodandwaterwatch.org. No spaces. www.foodandwaterwatch.org. Of course, for Consumer Reports, it's www.consumersunion.org. Again, no spaces. www.consumersunion.org. And I wish you would, Gene, if you would, talk about, there's another website that Consumers Union has, which is buysafeeatwell.org. buysafeeatwell.org. What is that?
Well, actually, we've recently transformed that even further into notinmyfood.org, where we're focusing on food safety problems and we at the moment are looking at the issue of excessive use of antibiotics on livestock, so that we get antibiotic resistance problems. But we've looked in the past at we've been supporting the GMO labeling initiative in California,
which we lost, of course.
But really, considering how much money the other side put into it, I'm impressed that 48% of Californians voted for it anyway.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
You know, GMO labeling is one of those interesting issues where we don't label our genetically engineered food in the United States, but mm-hmm. most of the rest of the world does.
Mm-hmm.
Europe does. Most of the Asian countries do. And again, here, that's also something that's a sort of a completely unexplored issue in terms of Chinese imports. But they have an official national system for reviewing safety and requiring labeling, there's so much that goes on in China that's beyond the reach of their food safety authorities that you really worry about what might be coming into the country.
Let me repeat your new website that you mentioned briefly, www.notinmyfood.org. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. Let me tell the listeners who you are again. By the way, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Gene Halloran, Director of Food Policy Initiatives for the nonprofit organization Consumers Union, which is the publisher of Consumer Reports. My other guest is Tony Corbo, the legislative representative for the nonprofit organization Food and Water Watch. He's responsible for food-related legislative and regulatory issues that come before Congress. And, pardon me, for those of you who are listening to the program live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the internet at www.kalw.org. In just a few minutes, I will give our local phone number, and I will invite you to call in with your questions, your comments, etc. We do the first half hour, which is a statewide version of the program. We record it on CD, and we send it to a number of other stations in California. In our pre-program discussion, Gene and Tony, you talked a bit about a big problem, and this was much of a surprise to me and of great concern to me, about Canada and a beef recall. Would you talk about that?
Yes. Sure. Well, you know, part of the problem there is we just assume that everything from Canada is safe.
Because well, I did.
It's you know, it's so much like us, and it's a, you know, stable, reasonable place, and you know, they seem to have a government that protects the rights of their citizens. But in fact, they've been having quite a bit of problems with beef. For example, they've had quite a number of cases of mad cow disease in their cattle, more than we have. And most recently, Tony has been looking at this issue of a major beef recall in Canada from one of their beef processing facilities because of contamination with one of these really severely dangerous bacteria that can make you very sick. I mean, Tony, why don't you talk to us about that?
Yeah, in August, a beef slaughter processing facility in Canada, XL Foods, located in Alberta, started to have problems with controlling E. coli 015787, which is a deadly pathogen in its beef products. And the way it was first discovered was a sample was taken at a border inspection station run by USDA in Sweetgrass, Montana, where they took a sample of the beef on September in August, and on September 3rd, a positive result came back. And so USDA
immediately of the E. coli.
This was E. coli.
Yeah.
And so USDA contacted the Canadian government that they found this positive. So USDA intensified It's testing of and sampling of product coming from this plant as it was entering the United States, and sure enough, several more positive cases for E. coli 015787 turned up in the beef products. So on September 13th, the United States delisted that plant. Now this plant in Canada is supplies a third of the beef in Canada, and apparently we import over half of the product from this plant. We half of the product from that's produced in this plant comes to the United States, and so so we delisted the plant, so we made it ineligible to export. And on September 16th, the Canadians actually started to issue recalls.
Mm-hmm.
And the recalls in Canada were expanded 20 times from September 16th through the middle of October.
Did the recall include recalling beef that was imported into the United States?
Well, this is the interesting thing. The USDA did not issue a recall announcement. They called it a public health alert. And originally they said that there were about 890,000 pounds of what are called beef trimmings. These are parts of beef that eventually get ground up to make hamburger patties. And USDA at the end of September informed the consumer groups that they had retrieved all of that. As the recall expanded in Canada, USDA then started to make modifications to its public health alert here in the United States, and eventually in early October, it expanded the public health alert to cover 2.5 million pounds of beef products. It included roasts, included steaks. That came across the border. Now,
this is really peculiar because when they find E. coli in a U.S. product, it's recalled. You have to take it back. You don't just tell people, oh, there's this deadly bacteria out in your food, so, you know, you might consider not eating it.
And what's interesting is that this particular plant, even though it was under different ownership in the year 2000, had a recall of products that came across the border into the United States. The USDA actually issued a recall. So everybody understood that that product was contaminated with E. coli 015787 in 2000. Yet for some strange reason, this year, USDA chose not to issue a recall. And so... The media never covered this here in the United States.
Why? Why do you think?
Well, I think because when I started to do a little more investigation into this, I discovered that the Canadians had adopted a new inspection system where they removed some of their government inspectors off of the slaughter line and replaced them with company employees. So the companies were essentially policing themselves. And the government inspectors left in the plant were doing verification. They were just checking records, paper, on the production process. Normally, when something like that happens, when a country that's exporting the United States changes its inspection procedures, it notifies USDA, and USDA has to give its approval. There is nothing on the USDA website indicating that USDA gave its approval to this new inspection process. So I have a feeling that USDA is trying to cover the fact that either they knew that this inspection process had changed and didn't go through the normal procedure, or they were completely unaware and now are embarrassed once they discovered what was going on.
Is this...
Isn't it also true, Tony, that USDA has proposed getting rid of the kind of border inspection that actually uncovered this problem?
And that's the other thing that's going on here, is that the Obama administration has decided to deregulate the border inspection process. There are 11 border inspection stations along the U.S.-Canada border. And any meat shipment or poultry, and we do import some poultry from Canada, has to go through a border inspection station where, at the very least, the paperwork is checked, the back of the truck is opened, and they can take a look to see if there's not a mixed load. You know, for example, we have pictures of trucks very recently coming from Canada that were not only carrying meat products but had dangerous chemical drums of dangerous chemicals in the same truck compartment as the meat. Those shipments were sent back to Canada because the drums could leak and contaminate the meat. So we have these 11 border inspection stations. So in January of 2012, the Harper government in Canada and the Obama administration announced that they were going to start a process by which the border inspection system was going to be eliminated. They were going to they were going to move forward with a pilot project where they were going Canadian meat processors could ship their product directly to a meat plant here in the United States for further processing without the need to go through the border inspection check. So, and even though we have this instance now with this XL plant, where the contamination was essentially discovered by a U.S. border inspection station, the U.S. and Canada are still proceeding with this pilot project to eliminate the border inspection.
Let me do this. What I want to do before we end the first half hour of the program, because we are nearly finished with the statewide version of the program, let me mention your websites again. www.foodandwaterwatch.org. www.consumersunion.org, and a new one that Consumers Union has, www.notinmyfood.org. Now, for those of you who are listening to us live, we will continue in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll continue on the Internet at www.kalw.org. It is about 7:29. At 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on contaminated imported foods from China, and we've also heard there's a problem from Canada, which is frankly, I think, very distressing considering how close we are, both physically, geographically, and socially to Canada. And my guests are Tony Corbo, the legislative representative for the nonprofit organization Food and Water Watch. He's responsible for food-related legislative and regulatory issues that come before Congress. My other guest is Gene Halloran, director of food policy initiatives for the nonprofit organization Consumers Union, publisher of Consumer Reports. I want to give you an opportunity to call in and ask some questions. I hope you will. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you'd like to call in, ask a question, make a comment, have a discussion with my guests. I'd like to also inform you that next week we will be doing our regular Call a Lawyer night. On the program, we're going to be doing landlord-tenant laws and issues. We will have, of course, in the conference room here, a number of attorneys, certified specialists, as well as attorneys who are not certified specialists in other fields, who will take your calls off the air while I'm doing the regular program. If you'd like to jot down the number, 1-800-525-9917. But I do welcome you to call in, ask a question, make a comment now. And before we take our first call, let me also mention to you, for those of you who may be interested, the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, which is at 3200 California Street at Presidio in San Francisco, is doing its second annual Art of Financial Well-Being Resource Fair on Thursday, November 29th. So obviously that's next week. And it's from 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. They're going to have speakers on the Affordable Care Act, financing a college education, financial goal setting, and this is free. They do ask that you do a registration in advance. And if you would like more information on this, you can either go to the website, which is www.jccsf.org/FWB, www.jccsf.org/FWB, or you can call Shiva Schultz at 415-292-1260, 415-292-1260. Again, this is the second annual Art of Financial Well-Being Resource Fair promoted by the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and that'll be on November 29th, 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. So let's take a call. Lisa, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Lisa, are you there? Yeah, hi, you're on the air.
Okay, here's my question. This happened about 2 years ago, and I didn't know what to do, so I'm asking you now about how to handle these things. I bought a pound of coffee, whole bean coffee, from a grocery store here. It was from a local provider. I'm not going to say who at this moment. And we, you know, used about half of it in our, you know, we grind it ourselves and every day. And about halfway through the bag, I poured it into the grinder one morning, and there were two 22 caliber bullet casings.
Oh, Lord.
That's a pretty powerful coffee.
Yeah, this was some whole bean coffee from one of the local coffee company.
So did you have some kind of a medical problem from this coffee, do you believe?
I have been very concerned ever since that I might have had, lead poisoning. I mean, I've had...
Have you been tested?
But I don't know what could be attributed or what.
Lisa, let me ask you this. Have you been tested by your doctor to determine if you have any excessive lead contact in your body?
No, I haven't.
Well, you should. I think you should. This was 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Did you file a complaint with any... Where do you live? What city?
I don't know what to do.
What city do you live in? What city?
Sausalito.
Okay, that's Marin County. You did not file a complaint with, for example, the district attorney's office over there?
I had no idea what I should do.
Okay. Did you contact the company to say, hey...
I tried to contact the company. And I called several times and asked who I should speak to about this, and nobody ever called me back.
Well, that's really not good. Would you do this? What I'd like to suggest you to do, and perhaps my guests also have some thoughts for you, but with two 22 caliber bullets in the coffee, which makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, that's outrageous.
The casing, right.
Okay, so what I would suggest you do is on Monday, if it's convenient with you, after the Thanksgiving holiday is over and the weekend's over, contact the Marin County District Attorney's Office Consumer Protection Unit. Ask for a complaint form or ask them how you can make a complaint and report this to them. This should be looked at because this is a situation where this company, whatever policy it has, this is incredibly strange, has very poor safety checking. Do either you, Tony, or Gene have any further thoughts for Lisa?
That's certainly a good idea, even though it was a couple years ago. Often consumer affairs offices will get repeat complaints. And
yes,
when you get
that's correct.
Five or six reports of the same thing, then they'll really start to pay attention. And,
right.
And you can do something about it. You also, in addition to the company who produced this coffee, you could go back to the store where you bought it.
That's right.
And you know, inform them of what was there. And
okay.
In most cases, I mean, this is now time has gone by, but
right.
If you go back relatively quickly, you know, you'll get at least a refund or exchange. I mean, I bought a package of a sort of salmon pate the other day, and when I got it home, the package was bulging.
What do you mean with bolting? What do you mean?
Well, it was in a plastic wrapping.
Yes.
That was sealed.
Yes.
The way a canned food would be sealed.
Yes.
But the plastic packaging was bulging. It was, the top of it was pushing up.
Ah.
Obviously, something gaseous was being generated inside.
So what did you do?
I went straight to the store where I bought it and showed it to them and said, I think this stuff has gone off. And they gave me a replacement. And they will also take it back to the place where they bought it.
So you know, Lisa, I want to come back to you, though, again on this. So with respect to these casings in that coffee, I really think, frankly, that it would be wise for you to see your doctor and get a blood test to determine whether or not you may have an excessive amount of lead in your bloodstream.
Okay.
I really think that's very important. Because because if you do, and this is an example of what may have caused this, my next thought for you would be to contact a personal injury attorney who represents plaintiffs who are injured to see whether or not there may be some kind of action you would bring against this company. So I hope that helps you.
Yeah, I think I still have the bag with some of the coffee and the bullet casings in it.
Well, good, good, good. Well, then you've got the evidence.
Yeah.
You got the evidence. So follow through, would you?
Okay.
Right. Here's a question that someone called in, and I want to ask Tony, you, and Jean this regarding melamine.
Yes.
If melamine is emphatically bad news mixed into food products, can we be confident that it is safe to eat with utensils made from melamine? Now, I'm not familiar with that, and I don't know anything about it, but this is the question.
It's a good question. And in fact, your utensils and plates made of melamine are fine. The trouble with, melamine is relatively non-toxic, but when you grind it up, this is what happens.
I see.
To a powder.
I see.
And then mix it in with food, it does become, it can become toxic. And the most severe problems in China were where they put it in milk and baby formula, if you can believe that. And there were deaths of babies in China because the quantities of melamine were very high.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that, it happened around the Olympics, but they suppressed the information getting out that there was a problem during the 2008 Olympics. So after the news got out that it was milk powder. It was put in infant formula, but it was also put in powdered milk. The news came out after the Olympics that 300,000 Chinese consumers were hospitalized and eight babies died. And then it was discovered that we were importing some of the products that were made with the milk powder. So actually, FDA did have to initiate recalls of cookies. I remember that, you know, there were cookies that were recalled, some candy that was made with some of the milk powder, and so it did reach our shores.
You know, one of the things that I think is really quite surprising here, considering we started the program talking about the deaths and the injuries to animals who had been eating some of these Chinese beef jerky products, or not beef jerky, but chicken jerky products. As I understand it, U.S. law right now does not permit poultry imports from China with respect to human consumption. Is that correct?
It's kind of a tortured history here, but technically, right now, China can export processed poultry products to the United States, provided that the raw poultry originated either from Canada or the United States. So, in other words, North American poultry processors could ship their raw poultry to China. They can cook it and send it back to us.
Do you feel comfortable with that?
No. And for a number of reasons. That particular regulation was proposed in 2005. At the time, USDA did go to China to visit their processing facilities and found all sorts of violations, food safety violations in those facilities. You know, they found grease dripping onto the food contact areas. They found cracked conveyor belts that still had parts of dried poultry parts still in the cracks that hadn't been cleaned. And so there were problems. And so when USDA proposed the regulation, most of the comments they received, these were comments through the Federal Register notice that they published, were against allowing China to export even under those conditions. Because you really couldn't, you really couldn't trust the safety of the product, and at the same time, there were a number of avian flu outbreaks in China infecting their poultry flocks, and unless you were physically standing there, unless we had people in USDA inspectors physically standing in those processing facilities, there's no guarantee that they were not shipping their own poultry to the United States that could be infected with avian influenza. So we opposed it, but the Bush administration approved it, but the Chinese, of course, were not satisfied with that because they wanted to ship their own poultry to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And Congress eventually stepped in and prevented USDA from spending any money to enforce any regulations that would or promulgate any regulations that would allow China to ship poultry to the United States. China turned around and filed a charge against the United States before the World Trade Organization, and they actually were successful because
which
China
means said, what
you're picking on us.
Which means what?
Which meant that the congressional prohibition on allowing China to export poultry to the United States had to be rescinded. So the World Trade Organization ruled in favor of China, and so the prohibition was lifted. So, but then USDA had to restart the process again of evaluating the Chinese food safety system, which then brings us to now, where China still is not exporting to the United States poultry products for human consumption. But in the interim, they figured out that they didn't have to ship poultry to the United States for human consumption because they diverted the poultry to pet food.
I see. Okay. So that's where we get to pet owners wanting to be very careful about looking to see whether or not a pet food product comes from China. One of the statistics that you will find if you look at the website for Food and Water Watch, www.foodandwaterwatch.org, is that 40% of imported consumer goods come from China. There are a number of things that probably you enjoy, and I suggest you might want to look at the label on the product to see where it comes from. For example, there's a fish called a tilapia, T-I-L-A-P-I-A, which apparently has a great concern, at least Food and Water Watch has about that. Apple juice that comes from China, canned peaches, pears, and even spinach. And so the reason that I wanted to do this program with both Tony and Gene is I think that this is just crucial that you, as listeners of this program and concerned consumers, and I didn't just plan to do it on Thanksgiving Eve. It just happened that way. So if I ruined your Thanksgiving dinner, I do apologize, but it just happened that way. And frankly, maybe it brings to your attention something that you need to take a look at. Let's take
something.
Go ahead, Gene. Yeah.
As I say, something that you need to keep in mind is that that the regulation of produce and fruits and seafood from foreign countries is much more relaxed, is much more lax than the regulation of meat, which is not already not good enough. But at least with meat and poultry products, the USDA can pass on individual countries and plants and approve them or disapprove them in terms of exporting to the U.S. For the rest of the products, we basically just have an open door. And it's up to FDA to inspect at the border. They look at less than 1% of what comes into the country. So it gets almost no scrutiny at all.
Do you believe, with all of the work that both of you have done, that if a consumer tries to educate him or herself by looking at your respective websites and sees this, do you think that the average consumer, and by that I mean the average person, intelligent person, who goes to the trouble to try to educate him or herself, can really know what to look out for and prevent a problem?
Well, you know, you can reduce your odds. You know, you can learn the things that cause problems. I mean, bananas basically don't make much of anybody sick, so you don't have to worry about
that. So we eat lots of bananas. Okay, I'm going to have bananas for Thanksgiving.
Okay. But seafood, you know, seafood, on the other hand, causes lots of people to get sick, and you should watch very closely where it comes from. But the individual consumer really cannot do this all by themselves. You can't become the food police.
Yeah.
You know, you would spend your whole life on this, and you're really dependent on the inspectors and the people that we think should be in other countries watching over the safety of food to ensure that it's produced in a proper way.
Any other? Well, let's take another call. Nikki, thank you very much for being patient. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm a big tea drinker, black and green tea, and it crosses my mind listening to you folks. I wonder if I have anything to worry about. I mean, I know that traditionally tea is often brewed such that the first bit is, like, thrown away, and I always thought, oh, I really like the strong stuff, and So I'm not brewing my tea traditionally. I'm kind of brewing it like most Americans do. You put the stuff in the pot or the cup, and you pour the hot water in. You don't throw anything off. But are there any issues with black tea or green tea from China?
I'm hesitating to answer because, you know, anecdotally and informally, I've heard stories from officials who have visited China who saw all sorts of terrible things that would make your hair stand on end. But I drink tea myself every day. And at least since you're pouring boiling water on it, you're not going to get pathogenic organisms that are, you know, you will kill off any bacteria that might be dangerous to you. You know, another safeguard, though, is you can buy from reputable companies. You know, this isn't foolproof. You know, big reputable companies themselves have all kinds of food safety problems, but they at least usually have some kind of quality assurance program with their suppliers, whereas something that, you know, you just buy that's kind of no-name tea might not.
If someone is concerned enough to want to see if the tea is organic, does that make a difference, do you think, Jean?
Generally, yes, although, like everything else, it's not foolproof.
Yeah, okay.
But organic production has to be approved by a certifier.
Yes.
And there are certifiers that operate in foreign countries. Mm-hmm. Some of them have better reputations than others.
Mm-hmm.
But the USDA determines which certifiers can actually approve products from foreign countries. And that does at least give them some level of scrutiny by an independent third party. So So in general, an organic product should not have any pesticides. It should not have any synthetic pesticides. It shouldn't have any synthetic fertilizers. So, in those regards, there's much less chance of contamination with some toxic chemical.
Nikki, I wish you luck with your tea.
Thank you.
I'm an organic tea drinker myself. So if you're not looking and buying organic, I certainly suggest that you might want to consider that. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ruth, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, I use a lot of ginger, and I know that I tend not to buy it if I don't know where it came from, because a lot of ginger that's sold commercially comes from China. I tend to buy it at farmers markets. But is ginger from China, has it been known to be a problem? Because most Chinese-American grocery stores do sell Chinese ginger.
I'm not aware of problems in ginger, but that doesn't mean there aren't any. Tony, are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, no, actually, I couldn't hear the product that was mentioned.
Ginger, Tony.
There was actually a case here in the Washington, D.C. area where one of the local news stations decided to test organic products, see if, in fact, they were free of pesticides. And they discovered you have a national chain, Whole Foods, that you know prides itself on carrying a lot of organic products. When they tested their in-store brand for pesticides, they discovered that there were pesticides in there, and the ginger came from China.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what Gene said earlier about the fact that you do have these third-party certifiers, apparently it was not a reputable one that was being used in China, because they passed this product off as being organic when in fact it wasn't, and apparently the pesticide is something that is on the Prop 65 list of possible carcinogens.
How did Whole Foods deal with this once it
found... they removed the product right away.
Okay.
And apparently they wound up really putting a short leash on the certifying company they were using.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to hear. All right, Eric, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, I used to work in downtown Oakland. I frequently go to Chinese grocery stores because they had lots of good vegetables and fruits. And usually I'm the only non-Chinese person there. But I always wondered, the stores are stacked floor to ceiling with canned goods and dry goods of food coming from China and all printed in Chinese. And I'm just wondering, is this stuff ever inspected or certified by the FDA, or the Chinese-American community here just getting poisoned?
It is not inspected except in this very haphazard way by FDA. As I said, less than 1% of what comes into the country is FDA inspected, and they tend to concentrate on things where they've had problems, like fresh seafood.
Right.
So canned goods, you know, probably hardly ever gets looked at, and you know, that you actually have to open something up and test it for a range of toxic chemicals. That probably almost never happens. It would be only if they had some evidence that there was a problem with a particular food that they might go after it. So you might just consider it to be, you know, as if you were traveling in China would you buy these products there? And, you know, I think a lot of people have serious cautions about that kind of food.
Eric, thank you very much for calling. By the way, we've got about another 2 or 3 minutes to go, and please, if you would accept my have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. I hope I have not ruined your Thanksgiving dinner. But this is important enough, a topic that I think we should all, you know, pay a real serious attention to. Let me give you, we'll take one more call, but let me give you the websites again if you'd like to educate yourself. For Food and Water Watch, it's www.foodandwaterwatch.org. It's all lowercase, no spaces. Consumers Union is www.consumersunion.org. Again, all lower spaces, all lowercase, pardon me, no spaces. And then a new one for Consumers Union, again, no spaces, all lowercase, www.notinmyfood.org. All right, one more call, and that would be, let's see, Marie-Louise. Hi, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm calling to rain on your banana feast.
Okay, good.
Because the banana is not a helpful fruit to this earth. It causes a great deal of trouble.
In what way?
It is grown, you know, usually from cuttings, and in order to keep it going, it has to be sprayed a lot, has a lot of different chemicals that probably we would prefer not to have in our food, and it also devastates the area where it grows.
What about organic bananas, Marie-Louise?
Yeah, I don't know enough to be okay. Clearly say those are okay. And I know those wonderful little short ones that you can buy at times or yeah. maybe find if you're yeah. traveling. But anyway, yes, people eat way too many bananas. They're very easy to peel and eat, but we're not monkeys.
Some of us are.
Yeah. I eat about two bananas a year.
Marie-Louise, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And I am a customer of the Whole Foods. I only buy organic bananas. Jean, do you have any comments with respect to Marie-Louise? And then we've got to go.
Well, she's totally right about the environmental issues. Mm-hmm. I was taking a very sort of simplistic view and thinking about the food safety aspects, and the fact that they've got this nice thick skin really protects the fruit underneath from mm-hmm. Most contamination. But she's right; there are tremendous issues regarding growing and. If the organic procedures are followed, it should be much better because they should not be using these terrible, the most dangerous.
We need to end with that. I want to thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Jean Halloran, thank Director you. Of Food Policy Initiatives for the nonprofit organization Consumers Union. Jean, thanks so much. And Tony Corbo, Legislative Representative for the nonprofit organization Food and Water Watch. Thank you so much.
And happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody else. By the way, next week, everybody, we're going to do landlord-tenant laws and disputes. And we'll also do Call a Lawyer Night. So if you're interested, you can call and speak to an attorney off the air. No obligation whatsoever. 1-800-525-9917. Again, happy Thanksgiving to you. I'm Chuck Finney.
That's Your Legal Rights on KALW, heard every Wednesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.